Okay, meeting will come to order on the Public Safety and Crime Prevention Policy Finance, and we'll start out with the roll call.
Cornish.
Here.
Woodard.
Here.
Mullery. Gothier.
Here.
Grunhagen.
Here.
Hilty.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Kelly. Kiefer.
Here.
Kreisel. Leidiger. Mariani. McDonald.
Here.
Moran.
Here.
Nornis.
Here.
Slocum. Smith.
Here.
Okay, members, would somebody offer a motion to approve the minutes from February 22nd?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Hilty moves the minutes of February 22nd. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carried. Members, today we have first a house file up for consideration, and after that a presentation by the Department of Human Rights, an agency budget presentation. And Representative Grunhagen, would you approach the table and Representative Grunhagen, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 469 and recommend it to pass and refer to the Judiciary Policy and Finance Committee.
Okay, thank you. Representative Grunhagen moves House File 469. And members, we had an amendment, not within the 24-hour rule, but I understand that the author is representative here, has talked to people and gotten your okay on it, so I waive the 24-hour requirement. And Representative Grubenhagen, would you like to offer your amendment to get the bill in the shape you'd like it?
Thank you.
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Grunhagen moves the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, Representative Grunhagen, the bill is in the proper shape that you would like it. Go ahead and present your bill.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill establishes a venue for filing harassment restraining orders. It proposes, House File 469 proposes to remove a barrier for victims of sexual assault who are seeking the protection of an HRO or a health restraining order. Current statute is silent in giving direction to the courts about the venue or filing of an HRO. This has resulted in inconsistent handling of these requests in different counties, particularly in Greater Minnesota. This problem has brought my attention by sexual assault victim service providers. Advocates who were working with victims found that they were appearing in one county to help their client file an HRO petition, only to be told that they would have to go to another county to seek court protection. As we all know, the trauma and complex issues raised by a sexual assault sometimes makes it hard for victims to step forward, whether it is to report the incident, seek care, support, and protection, or to prosecute. Even the smallest barriers can become paralyzing. This bill seeks to relieve one of those small administrative barriers that can cause a victim of sexual violence to stop pursuing a path toward safety and recovery. In summary, the bill makes the process for filing an HRO essentially the same as filing for an order of protection. Section 1 of the bill makes it clear that an HRO petitioner will be able to file for relief in the county of residence or of either party or in the county where the harassment occurred, and there will be no residency requirements. Section 2 allows the court, as is the current practices with restraining orders, to waive petitioner filing fees. In addition, a fiscal note has been requested, although it's presumed that that will be negligible. We will share this with the committee as the bill moves through the process. We do not presume to know what the court's assessment will be. However, we do not expect a fiscal impact to be assigned to this bill, or if so, the cost will be considered, as I mentioned before, negligible. At this time, I'd like to give a couple of acknowledgments. First, to the co-authors, Representative Cornish, Smith, Mullery, and Johnson. And also, there's several endorsements. One, the Minnesota County Attorneys Association, the Minnesota Coalition for Battered Women, and the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. In addition, I'd like to recognize Mr. Bob Tracy for his dedicated work on this bill. And Bob is right there. Okay. Now at this time, I'll introduce my testifier, Donna Dunn. She is the Executive Director of the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Donna?
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Mr. Chair,
Dunn, go ahead.
Leader Mullery and members of the committee, as you heard, my name is Donna Dunn. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. MnCASA is a nonprofit organization which was incorporated in 1981, and we provide we provide technical assistance and support to the over 70 sexual assault advocacy programs across the state of Minnesota. I'm very pleased to address the committee in support of House File 469. As members of the committee are surely aware, sexual violence is a significant problem in Minnesota. According to the 2007 report from the Minnesota Department of Health, the cost of sexual violence in Minnesota, more than 61,000 Minnesota residents were sexually assaulted in the year 2005. Some victims of sexual assault seek civil protective orders from the courts to ensure that the perpetrator is barred from contacting the victim. Criminal penalties apply when such a court order is violated. One sort of protective order the victims seek is a harassment restraining order, or an HRO. I'd like to speak a little bit about protective orders before I address the specifics in this bill. Today I'm going to be discussing orders that are available from the civil court based on a petitioner's request and a judge's determination of whether the request meets the statutory requirements. You would obviously know that a criminal court may issue a no-contact order on its own initiative at any time, but today's bill only addresses a particular type of protective order available through the civil court process. Minnesota statute defines harassment as, quote, a single incident of physical or sexual assault, or repeated incidents of intrusive or unwanted acts, words, or gestures that have a substantial adverse effect or intended to have a substantial adverse effect on the safety, the security, or the privacy of another, regardless of the relationship between the actor and the intended target. And that's critical language. The nature of the relationship between the parties is an important distinction between this harassment restraining order and an order for protection, or OFP, which is a different kind of order. OFPs apply when domestic abuse has occurred and the relationship between the parties is either familial or as household members. If a perpetrator of sexual assault is not related to the victim, does not live with the victim, or is either unknown to the victim or merely an acquaintance of the victim, then an OFP is not an available resource for a sexual assault victim. An HRO would be. And now to the specifics of the problem addressed by this bill. At present, as Representative Grunhagen indicated, the statute does not state where a petitioner for an HRO can file for relief. This has led to inconsistent interpretation of the law statewide, translating into confusion for petitioners and for the courts, delays in action, and compromised safety when a victim needs protection. Some, including chief judges or district courts, acting in lieu of clear statutory direction, have interpreted the omission to indicate that the HRO should be filed in a manner similar to other civil court filings, meaning that a petition can be filed only in a county in which one or more of the respondents reside or in which the cause of action occurred. On the other hand, some courts and attorneys have interpreted the omission to mean that the HRO petition can be filed in the same manner as the OFP. Under the OFP statute, as Representative Grunhagen indicated, a petition can be filed in the county of residence of either party, the respondent or the petitioner, or in the county in which the domestic abuse occurred, and there are no residency restrictions. This is the solution that this bill is offering to you. Here's an example of why we are seeking the statutory clarification. A couple of years ago, an advocate from one of MnCASA's member programs was assisting a victim of sexual violence, and they went to file the report for an HRO in the county in which the victim lived. The court clerk instructed the petitioner that she had instead to file in the county where the incident occurred. When the petitioner went to that particular county to make the filing, she encountered the perpetrator. He harassed her, and as you can imagine, that was a traumatic experience. While I realize that what happened to this particular victim may be unusual, it is important to point out that she would not have had the unwanted interaction if she could have filed for an HRO in her home county. Further, this victim had to travel a significant distance from her home county in order to file for the HRO. This may not be much as much of an issue for victims living in the Twin Cities area, but it can become a significant barrier for victims living in greater Minnesota. House File 469 aligns the statutory directive for filing HRO petitions with the existing language for OFP filings. If this bill is enacted into law, an HRO petitioner will be able to file for relief in the county of residence of either party or in the county where the incident occurred. And there are no necessary residency requirements. HRO petitioners seeking protection deserve clear guidance from the statutes about where to file because their safety is at stake. House File 469 also updates the HRO statute fee waiver. The statute currently waives filing fees for a petitioner in certain circumstances. And those circumstances specifically are when there is an allegation of stalking or of criminal sexual conduct. In fact, the federal government requires that our state and every state, in order to be eligible for grants to combat violent crimes against women, must certify that its laws do not require a victim of sexual assault, stalking, or domestic violence bear the cost of filing for a protection order. So this provision actually assures that Minnesota is in compliance. The change which is proposed simply updates the fee waiver language to include changes that were made in the HRO statute last year. Well, in closing, MnCASA works to ensure that victims and survivors of sexual assault have the best possible access to the judicial system and to the protections that it offers. House File 469 will help ensure that the process of obtaining a harassment restraining order is as straightforward as possible for petitioners as well as judicial system employees. I want to thank Representative Grunhagen for bringing this bill forward, and I thank the committee for the opportunity to make this statement in support of House File 469.
Thank you for your testimony, and we have a question for one of the members. Representative Grunhagen, yeah?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd also like to introduce at this time Ms. Rana Fuller.
And,
why don't you come on up?
We got a question from one of our members first, okay. Can come up if you'd like. And in the meantime, we'll Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good to see you, Ms. Dunn. I just have a question on notification. If there's a order signed in St. Louis County and the other county of residence is, say, Mille Lacs, how is notification done with law enforcement, with the judicial system?
Director Dunn.
So they're enforced.
Okay. Mr. Chair and Representative, I'm actually going to defer to Raina Fuller, who is in fact an attorney.
Okay.
And I believe perfect that time. She has would be able to answer that.
Ma'am, if you state your name and title and go ahead.
My name is Raina Fuller. I am a managing partner and supervising attorney at the Battered Women's Legal Advocacy Project. Thank you very much. The process would be they would fax the order from St. Louis County down to Mille Lacs County. It would be then given to the Sheriff's Department, and the Sheriff's Department would serve the harassment restraining order. Does that?
Yep. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other members? Did you have testimony to offer?
I do not have testimony. I'm here just to provide any legal information or answer any legal questions.
Sounds great. Mr. Chair, she's here to make me look competent.
Okay. All right.
And that's hard to do at times, Mr. Chair.
Okay, job.
All right, members, if there are no more questions, I think it's a fairly non-controversial good bill. And if there are no questions, we're going to renew your motion, Representative Grunhagen. Yeah. Oh, opposition? Representative Grunhagen, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to renew the motion to to pass and to be re-referred to the Judiciary Policy on Finance.
Okay. Representative Grunhagen renews his motion to House File 469. He recommended to pass and move to Judiciary Committee. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you, Representative Grunhagen.
Mr. Chair, it is my intention to bring bills forward that I always get 100% support on.
Good luck on that one.
We'll start voting now.
You can take some of mine. All right. Okay, next we have the Department of Human Rights Agency budget presentation. Would you, you can all come up or one at a time, wherever you'd like.
Yeah.
Who will be the main grillee?
Mr. Chair, my name is Wendy Adler Robinson. I'm currently the acting commissioner at the Department of Human Rights, and I will be the main grillee.
Okay. And then, Paige, could you turn up the microphone on her mic? We'll a little trouble. And her name. Hang on just a second. First question I wanted to ask you, and we grilled the department was here yesterday, too. We had sent you a letter, but we got back basically no response, and we'd like to react to why.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Department of Human Rights did receive your request for information. I also did have a telephone conversation with your chair, and subsequent to that, the governor's office directed the state agencies to work with the committee in providing the information, but did not encourage us to put anything in writing at this point. But we are free to help your fiscal analysts get that information if you don't if we don't provide it to you here today in our presentation.
Ma'am, just curious, and was it Robinson, your last name?
Yes, Robinson.
Okay. Director or?
I'm the acting commissioner.
Acting commissioner. I'm sorry, ma'am. The question would be is if you could answer it, did the governor's office leave the decision open to you whether you could, or did he direct you, he or she direct you not to furnish the information?
Mr. Chair, the governor's office directed us to refer to a letter that was sent by Commissioner Jim Showalter from the Minnesota Management and Budget Department, which was to be considered the response for us, for all state agencies, to be used in that regard.
Okay. Just for your information, I think that was a bad decision. If you could relay that back to your command and control, it's just that, and I don't know how the other party feels about it, but they have to make the same tough decisions that we do, and if we don't have all the information in time and on time, and I think Representative Paymar had some of the same problems last session or sessions ago with corrections when they came in and a debate over information that he had asked for also, and you know, there's a lots of concern, and you folks know that the Department of Human Rights has been a controversial subject before about duplicity, and are there things that are covered by you folks that are covered by other agencies? So knowing all that concern, it should have been a good idea for Mr. Showalter to provide us all the information so that we could make the best decision, but that's water over the bridge. So you can go ahead with your presentation, please.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. We were here, the department was here several weeks ago, and we did a general department overview for this committee. And I would just like to go over again what it is that our agency does. We are a law enforcement agency which enforces Minnesota Statutes 363A. And that is the statute that covers illegal discrimination in the state of Minnesota. We have three main areas in the agency that enforce that statute. The complaint investigation, which investigates charges of alleged discrimination that occurred in the state of Minnesota. The contract compliance unit that issues certificates of compliance for businesses who wish to do business with the state of Minnesota. And then we have our outreach and education unit that provides information on how to eliminate discrimination to various groups and organizations throughout the state of Minnesota. The governor's budget recommendation keeps it at an agency level, which is at $3.341 million. That is a slight drop as far as full-time employees go from our current full-time equivalent of 40.1 staff to 39.3 full-time staff. With that, I would be happy to answer any specific questions you have relating to our budget.
Hey, first of all, Commissioner Robinson, we'd like to hold things up here just for an announcement. The 9 through 12 graders from the Lighthouse Academy of Nations in Minneapolis is here for a visit today, so we'd like to give them a hand and welcome them. Thank you very much for being here today. Okay, members, you'd like to proceed with the questions. Any of you have anybody on the list yet here? Representative Woodard?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. I have quite a few questions, but I'm going to limit it to one at the moment, and that is when you look at the education that you're doing throughout the state with regards to discrimination, what is the focus, the public sector, the private sector? What is your focus there?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative, the focus for our education and outreach is the private sector of businesses, employers, and various groups and organizations throughout the state of Minnesota. One of the things that our education and outreach unit wants to do is, because of the fact that there are so many organizations that represent so many different communities and groups within the state of Minnesota, we can't reach everybody in the state of Minnesota with our explaining the laws of discrimination and so on. So we want to utilize the organizations that are already set up, that are already in place, that speak the languages of the individuals that they represent, and that we work with those organizations so that they can spread our message and our rights and rules with the non-discrimination laws to their own members or constituent services.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Oh, yes, Representative Ward.
Yep. So are these seminars or these outreach sessions, are they focused on Minnesota-specific requirements, or are they focused on discrimination in general?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe that there, I think what I would like to do at this point is, I'm very fortunate to have with me today is our outreach representative for the State Department of Human Rights, and if I may, I could have him answer the question more fully for you.
Sure.
If that is okay with you, Mr. Chair?
You bet. You could say your name and title, yep, and go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Mario Hernandez. I'm the Legislative and Community Affairs Liaison for the Department. Mr. Chair and Representative, to answer your question, we specifically design seminars and other outreach events to reach both the general public and businesses, teaching individuals about what rights they have under the Human Rights Act, and businesses specifically about what requirements they have to be complying with the law. In addition to that, we provide specific training on how they can implement good policies and practices to be compliant with the requirements under the Human Rights Act. Our focus primarily is on Statute 363A, the Human Rights Act, although at times we do provide education in similar topics related to discrimination as a way of adding more value to what we're providing with local businesses.
Representative Woodard.
One more follow-up. So how many people have attended these in the last year, and can you give me sort of a breakdown of who attends the outreach sessions and a little bit more information about that?
Mr. Hernandez?
Mr. Chair, Representative, For a total in 2010, calendar year 2010, we reached approximately 6,000 individuals through a combination of our seminars, seminars are focused on businesses, community dialogues, which are meant for the private individuals. We have also had our Human Rights Day conference, which reaches a combination of lawyers, human resource professionals, social service providers, but a total of about 6,000 people. And we are looking at a cross-sector of individuals. We make sure that we reach out to nonprofits as well as businesses, as well as other individuals working both in the public and private sector.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, you handle complaints also, correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
No, Representative Grunhagen.
Just to follow up. I've had the opportunity, I don't know if it's an opportunity, but the occasion to be at least aware of a situation where a complaint was filed. Can you give a couple examples where you had a complaint filed, what the procedure is in dealing with the complaint, and what the results were in terms of your stated goal of eliminating discrimination, without sharing specific names, obviously.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Representative, the process, if an individual feels that they have been discriminated against, will contact the department through various means, either written contact, electronic contact, walk-in contact, or telephone contact. At that point, the investigators determine if the alleged charge of discrimination is jurisdictional. A jurisdictional meaning that it happened within the correct timeline that we cover in the statute. It covers a number of different jurisdictional areas that we look at. If so, then the charge then is moved into a pre-investigation, where the first thing that we try to do is have the case settled. We have an alternative dispute resolution program at the department that is one of our creations, that what we try to do is to refer all of these cases before they go into a full investigation to be mediated by volunteer mediator attorneys who have volunteered their time and services to the department to mediate these cases. The cases cannot be mediated or successfully satisfied at that point. They go into a full investigation. The full investigation, there are a number of different outcomes that can result as when the case goes into investigation. It could be dismissed because it doesn't warrant enough resources. There's just not enough information for an investigator to investigate. There can be a no probable cause determination, which indicates that there has not been enough information provided to the department for us to make a finding of discrimination. Or there can be a probable cause finding, which indicates that there has been enough information for the department to determine that discrimination has occurred. At that point, the case then was referred to the Minnesota Attorney General's office for conciliation.
Representative Grunhagen?
Mr. Chair, so how do you measure your results? I mean, how many complaints do you receive? How many actually warrant approximately in a year? How many warrant actual action? And what type of actions do you take? Obviously, a lawsuit can come out of it through the Attorney General. But to remedy discrimination, it's if you'd respond to that, Commissioner.
Yes, Commissioner? Mr. Chair, Representative. When we have the opportunity to, for example, if there is probable cause found in a chart in a case, a conciliation effort will provide for training, education for the business that has been discriminating against, for example, a business against an employee. And so what we do is there's always the component of training and education throughout the entire process of when a company or a landlord or business comes through our agency. we're always attempting to let them know what they can do to try to prevent this from happening again in the future. We measure our work based on really the quality and timeliness of getting the charges and the cases through the system. The statute does require us to come to a determination within 365 days that when the charge is filed. And so that's one of our measurements is the timeliness on that. Hopefully that answers some of your question.
Ms. Chair, just
Representative Grunegan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I mean, like, how do you measure that you've eliminated discrimination or you've rectified it in a situation where a lawsuit doesn't take place? I mean, if somebody objectively looks at what you're doing, how can they see concrete evidence that something was actually accomplished?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's a very good question. Because a lot of times we come up with, if the more education and outreach that we do can either do one of two things. It can train and educate people so that they know what they should and shouldn't do in their employment arena, or it can also make people more aware of their rights and bring them in to file charges. So it's, to measure what we're doing is very difficult, because it could be we're doing a very good job and that's why so many people find us and can file charges, or we're doing a very good job and that's why so many people don't come to us and don't file charges. So that's a difficult thing to measure. So what we do try to do is just keep what our work that is by statute, that things are done by timeline, that the time period that gives us, and we measure our work timeliness in that way.
Representative Grunegan?
This will be my last question. I've got a number of other ones, but I'll restrain myself after this one. This is something I've observed personally, both with myself and just in general. And in your educational program, do you teach the concept, as stated in our Constitution, that our civil and religious liberties are from God? Declaration of Independence is the idea of the Creator. Now, the reason I say that is when we take the focus of ourselves off ourselves and onto a greater being, human nature being what it is, it needs that type of a reference. And what that teaches me personally is that all of us are created equal, okay, which is what our Declaration of Independence says. And our preamble of the Constitution says that our civil and religious liberties come from God. That type of education to me, which is missing in our public educational system, and I was a school board member for about 16 years, and I tried to put that in there, has a very positive effect in terms of how we view each other, not only from a discrimination standpoint, but also just generally as human beings. I believe it's a necessary ingredient in any type of curriculum. Is there any type of reference to God or Creator in the curriculum, educational curriculum that you use in the public?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grunegan, no, there is not. The information that we use is the Minnesota State Statute 363A, and there's nothing in that statute that references that.
Mr. Chair, one last comment. I would just strongly recommend that you'd include the concept that our founding fathers believed was necessary in the founding of our country, and also the founding fathers of our state when they put it in the preamble of the Constitution of the State of Minnesota. Just my recommendation.
Yeah. Representative Kelly, and then Representative Kiefer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I think we've got a number of questions coming on just maybe what your correspondence addressed, and I just have a comment on our process going forward. I understand the director is taking guidance from the governor's office, and I'm extremely disappointed that we would may have been circumvented by that. And as you indicated, Chair Paymar last year ran into the same problems of requesting information. So I'm just wondering on process if we need to reiterate our request to these departments, because if they're not going to provide the solution-based things that we need from a time frame standpoint, we are going to be under a tight time frame. So if they're not going to come to us and provide us that help and information prior to us meeting, do we need to meet with all these departments? I'm just wondering if our request is going to be met by the rest of these departments coming in.
Representative Kelly, you bring up an interesting point. Maybe we should prorate the time we spend on each one by how much information they give us and just make their own decision where to make the cuts. But, yeah, it frustrates me, too. Commissioner, any reaction?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Chair.
To that point. To that point, my understanding is that there's been a basically precedent set for many governors and that this one is exactly the same as the precedent. So I think it's kind of, I'll take back the initial word I was going to say. I think it's improper to be attacking one governor for what was accepted by other governors.
I was attacking Showalter. No, Representative Muller, I wasn't attacking anybody. It's just that if you've been on the same committees I have for the last 8 years, policy and finance committees, usually we get a lot more information. We don't just get a quick letter saying that look it up on the internet and do your best and we'll help you out with any difficulties. That's what the letters seem to be saying in so many words. But nobody's attacking anybody. It's just that I don't want these folks to feel bad, and they give us half the information, and then it ends up affecting our decision on their budgets. Not to say that we're going to cut them in relation to the information they give, but it sure helps out a lot in our decision. We were talking the other day. We had some fine words between the DFL and GOP about cooperation and being innovative and coming to solutions together and working on the problems, but then it's hard to do. We don't get along, or we get along, and then the governor throws a wrench in the works, so... Representative Kiefer.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Robinson, correct me if I'm wrong, did you say you have roughly about 40 employees in the organization?
Mr. Chair, Representative, currently we have budgeted 39.1 full-time employees and 36 employees currently with the agency on this day.
Okay. And did you say your budget is $3.34 million?
$3.4 million, Representative.
Okay. And you also said that, and is it okay if I just follow through, Chair?
Representative Kiefer.
Okay, thanks. You had mentioned before that you use a lot of community organizations to get your message out. Is that part of your organization? And I just wondered how that's done, and if it is, do they have commissioners, or are these nonprofit groups, and how are they funded? Thank you.
Yes, Chair and Representative
Commissioner.
We work with a lot of local human rights commissions. There are a number of these are volunteer commissioners, people that are throughout the state of Minnesota. Various cities, Bloomington, Richfield, areas such as that, they have local human rights commissions. Actually, it's up throughout the state of Minnesota. We work with them and assist them with the information that they need. As far as the nonprofit organizations, Mario, do you want to answer?
Yes.
Go ahead, sir.
Chair, Representative, we do work with a variety of different organizations to provide information not in the community, the education information. We have partnered in the past with nonprofits to reach individuals. We have partnered with local chambers of commerce to organize and promote the business training seminars that we've done. We've worked with higher education to connect with the youth attending those institutions. We partner with other state and federal enforcement agencies to provide coordinated messages about the different laws we enforce. And we also have examples of partnering with local access television channels to provide informative videos about topics related to the Human Rights Act. So we do partner with a multitude of sectors and a multitude of parties throughout the state.
Just like to follow up Representative Kiefer.
Okay. Thank you. So you're all over the state. Are the I'm going to go back to the 36 full-time employees. Are they all located in one area, or are they around the state?
Yes, Representative. We are all located in downtown St. Paul, except for two employees that are in St. Cloud, and they are. We have an enforcement officer and a staff person that the department does not fund, that they're funded by the St. Cloud and St. Joseph Joint Powers Agreement. They've used community development block grant funds to get a local human rights presence in their area, and we are staffing that for them. They're reimbursing the state for that. So most of the staff, except for the two individuals, are in St. Paul.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just noticing in the agency profile we have here shows there were 747 charges filed this past year, 2010. About 50 of them apparently not resolved yet. Is that an increase or decrease from previous years? Can you tell me?
Commissioner?
Yes, Representative. We have had up to 527 charges that had been filed in a this is a 6 month reporting in 2009. Then it's gone down to 325 in the second 6 month period, 422 and 380. So it's pretty much stays consistently around 400 charges.
Okay. Can you give the committee some examples of what constitutes charges that would be filed, and typically what would that involve?
Chair, Representative, the majority of the charges filed with our agency are charges in employment. They're employees filing charges against their employers, and the highest rate at this time is charges that are alleging discrimination based on their disability. Okay. The second one would be based on race and so on.
Okay. Chair, one final question, I guess, and it also shows the amount of money recovered, $744,000, a little more than that. How do you set a value? What determines what kind of resolution you're going to be looking for as far as recovery? Is there a method to that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure I understand your question. I think that we're funded at an agency level. We don't get any other additional funds other than from the general fund just to enforce the statute.
Mr. Chair, I guess what I meant to say, there are fines involved? If there are findings, that's what I'm getting at?
Well, there is no, Mr. Chair, Representative, there's no other than a fee that we do charge for businesses to get a certificate of compliance to do business with the state, to do business with the state of Minnesota. There are no other revenue sources or revenue streams coming into the agency that we can use other than what is provided by the general fund.
Mr. Chair, so there are no fines or charges against the employer if they're found guilty?
Mr. Hernandez or Commissioner?
Yes, Representative. If there has been a probable cause determination that there has been discrimination, then there is a conciliation that would happen with the Attorney General's office, and there could be a monetary damages at that point that would be settled and agreed upon settlement. If not, at any time, the individuals could take their case to court.
Okay, Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Madam Commissioner. I've got a couple of questions here. Just to clarify, you said there are 36 FTEs, is that right?
Yes, Representative, yes.
The And as a follow-up, Mr. Chair,
Edward?
The full-time equivalent showing up in the agency overview for the governor's budget shows 39.3. Is there an intention to increase the headcount for the Department of Human Rights?
Mr. Chair and Representative, that is something that we will be looking at. There will be a new commissioner for the department that has just been appointed that is going to have an opportunity to review the resources, review the areas that that he feels needs to be focused on. We are budgeted for the 39. We have not been filling positions in anticipation of being able to have you know our funds, and but we are currently understaffed. We have no position. We have no deputy appointed or legal person. We don't have. We've had a number of investigators that have left employment for other agencies, and we have not been filling those positions. But we can fill 39. That's what we have.
So as a follow-up, Mr. Chair. So that means that there's currently you're running an overage in your budget. Is that correct,
Commissioner?
I can't really, Representative, I'm not sure if I could say that, that we have an overage. We have money that's dedicated to these to fill these positions.
Right. Yeah. And they're, Mr. Chair, they're dedicated, they're just not spent. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, we're waiting to fill the positions.
Okay. And as an additional follow-up, Mr. Chair,
on
the, can you give us just a quick breakdown on, so you've got the outreach, you've got the investigations piece, and those are the two core areas. Can you give us a breakdown of where the budget goes in relation to those two areas?
Commissioner?
Representative? The enforcement of the state statute is the number one area where we focus on our resources, and then the compliance area would be after that, which is where we require certificates of compliance for businesses to do business with the state. We want to ensure that they're affirmative action, equal opportunity employers. And these are businesses that are going to be bidding on a state contract of over $100,000 and that they have over 50 full-time employees. And then the education and outreach is the third area of focus that we do in the agency.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, so you don't have a breakdown of specifically what that is, but that's okay. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, if you would like the specifics on that, okay. We can provide them for you.
Oh, wait, thank you.
Yes.
And so on the piece where you're providing compliance certificates for companies bidding on projects with the state, what is the what's the exact fee for companies to do that, to do business with the state?
Mr. Chair, Representative, $75.
$75, okay. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I'm new here, so I got some pretty basic stuff, I think. But I want to follow up on the certificate of compliance, first of all, and then a couple of questions after that. What's the criteria to get that certificate, if you don't mind just going over that real quick?
Commissioner.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative. The certificate of compliance is issued by our staff once the firm or business has submitted an affirmative action plan for goals on how they intend to hire women and minorities and that they have an equal opportunity business. There are certain criteria that is required from Minnesota rules, and our staff reviews the plan to make sure it meets those requirements. If so, then they issue the certificate.
Can I follow up? We're still doing that? I thought the federal government did away with that. I don't really know, but is that a federal requirement?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, it's a state requirement. The federal government does still require that. There's an Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs, which businesses that do business with the federal government also have to take affirmative action efforts in order to do business with the government.
Okay.
Can I Representative Leibiger.
Mr. Chair, Mr.
Mm-hmm. Representative Mulder, this point.
Chair, I believe to that point. Ms. or Acting Commissioner Adler, whatever you're, I think doesn't MnDOT has to comply with that. You do the state-funded projects, but I believe not just the federal government, but I think MnDOT has to comply with that because most of their projects are federally funded.
Mr. Chair, that is
okay. Representative Ledger.
But it sounds as though we've expanded that, so if any company in this state that's going to do business with the state government on a contract over $100,000, you have to come in, or they have to, this company's got to submit a business plan or an affirmative action plan. I'd like to ask a couple of other different areas. So, I heard you say that the vast majority of the cases that come to you have to do with employer-employee relations. Is that correct? I want to confirm that first. And it sounded, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounded like that was the bulk of it, the majority of it.
Yes, Representative, that is correct.
So there's another agency. What is the unemployment insurance agency? You know, and usually there's a lot of problems when employees are being terminated. I think that's probably, actually I should turn that into a question. Is that what you're seeing? Is it usually a situation when an employee is terminated and that's when you get involved? And what I'm driving at is there's other agencies that kind of deal with a lot of this stuff, like the Unemployment Insurance Agency, because they got to get all the reports. And then is that when you would get a referral or something? How does that work?
Mr. Chair, Representative, based for employment discrimination cases, yes, termination would be one of the factors. Failure to hire would be a factor. Failure to promote could be a factor. Harassment, for example, sexual harassment on the job could be a factor. So there's a number of different types of employment situations that could, where discrimination could arise. The other agencies that you're referring to, DEED, I believe, they would just their focus is on unemployment insurance claims, and if individuals are qualified for that, they're not looking at that the individual may have been fired illegally, which would be because of a discriminatory act.
Representative Leidinger?
Well, but they've. Doesn't it usually start there, though, indeed? I mean, is that... I'm just kind of wondering, at what point do you get involved? It seems to me that a lot of these issues arise in the companies with the individual, and it seems to me that, you know, there's the normal law enforcement path that one could go. And then there's also DEED, which has just a plethora of services. So at what point do you enter into this, these cases? I'm going to venture to guess that it's you're way down the line. But can you comment on that, please, Commissioner?
Yes, Representative. The department receives approximately 12,000 telephone calls a year, and we are doing a lot of the referring out to the other agencies. We're getting when someone feels that they've been treated unfairly at their place of employment. Most of the times, it doesn't rise to the level of a discrimination complaint. What it is maybe a wage and hour complaint. Unfair labor practices, overtime issues, or could be unemployment cases. We get all sorts of questions when people feel that they've been harmed by their employer. So out of the 12,000 phone calls we get, we refer a lot of them to other state agencies.
Representative,
so it really comes into you first, And then it, so what's the percentage of cases then that you're, I mean, you're a referral agency, it sounds like. What percentages of those calls are where you're doing referrals, please?
Well, out of, Mr. Chair, out of the approximately 12,000 telephone calls we get, we result in about 800 charges being filed that actually rise to the level of jurisdictional discrimination.
That you're going to retain and you're going to do something about.
That is correct.
Okay. Do you document all those calls?
Is that your lighter group?
Sorry, sir.
Commissioner?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have a automatic call distribution center that can log in the number of calls.
All right.
Representative Lighter?
I'm trying to figure out all these agencies and what they're all doing, and I'm seeing some overlaps. I'm seeing inefficiencies. Of course, when I run my business, I have to worry about overlap and inefficiencies. And I'm trying to do the best I can to understand this. I want to go to the other part of your business, though, which is the outreach that you do. Can that be outsourced? Because there's 30 organizations out there, human rights organizations, which are in the communities. They're talking about a lot of this. Can they be doing that job of training? Can we outsource that side of that business?
Commissioner?
Representative, I'm going to ask Mario to also respond to that, but my initial response to that is that we have only one individual or two individuals that are doing outreach, Mario being one of them. So it's not a big there's not a large staff that does the outreach component of the agency. The primary staff are the investigators who investigate the charges.
Mr. Hernandez, did you have anything to add?
No, not
okay. Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, good to see you again.
Thank you.
First of all, I guess I was only going to have a couple questions, but now I have several more. Commissioner, are you a government agency or a business?
We are a government, Mr. Chair, Representative, we're a government agency.
Yes. Commissioner, the city of Duluth, St. Paul, and I think Minneapolis have their own human rights departments, correct?
Yes, Representative.
And if somebody files a charge with those agencies, then they are not eligible to file with the state?
Commissioner, the Representative has.
Okay. So as far as that's concerned, that's not duplication?
Commissioner?
No, it's not duplication, Representative. The various agencies that you're talking about have different jurisdictions.
Right.
And the state covers different areas than the local jurisdictions.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Guthrie.
The other thing, I guess, what I would like to... There is a distinct difference between an individual who calls you and versus one who files a complaint, who really believes they've been discriminated against, correct?
Commissioner?
Yes, sir.
So it's not like the department, Commissioner, Chairman, Commissioner, it's not like the unemployment agency is going to call up and say Joe Smith's been discriminated against. That doesn't really happen, does it?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, that does not happen at all. No.
Okay, because there's different standards for unemployment versus discrimination.
That is correct. That agency is set up to enforce its statute and rules, as are we.
Representative Guthrie.
Okay, thank you. And then I just want to make an aside in response to Representative Kelly's remarks. You know, as far as I know, Mr. Chair, nobody on my side of the aisle received a letter that was apparently sent to department heads asking for budget information. And then I've sat through committees for 2 days now having chairs rail at department heads about that when they've been directed by the Office of Management and Budget to respond a certain way. And I guess if we're going to talk about cooperation, then I guess we'd like to see the request.
Representative Guthrie, yeah, we could sure do that.
Thank you, Chairman. for the cooperation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Representative Moran.
Gosh, I usually don't have many questions, more always comments. And so I'm going to make a comment. And first to Representative Gruhagen, and according to, as a Christian and a person who believes in a higher power and a God, in reference to the Constitution and the fact that our founding fathers wrote that we are all created equal, we know that has never been so, because my ancestors went through slavery, which means that we were never seen as equal. So I just want to reference that, and that the fact that although we serve a higher God and believe in a higher God, that people are mean, and people do not always see us as equal, and sometimes treat us all as equal. So I just want us to recognize that that is a fact. And we're seeing that as history shows us and tells us that that is a fact. So I just want to say that. Otherwise, we'll be in a good place. But we're not always in a good place. And so I would also like to state that I just want to commend the Office of Human Rights, because I think it is a department that we truly need. There are so many other departments, but we need someone that, as a person of color, as an African-American, that I can call on and have a department there who is going to recognize that discrimination does happen, it is real, and their job and responsibility is to ensure that we are all being treated equal. That is a good place. For example, I have a daughter who is 17 years old who attends Highland High School, who was a very sweet girl. And not just me saying that as a mother, she really, really is, from other people who have seen her, knows her, and she is a very sweet girl. But anytime she can come home from school and say to me, "Mom, why is all the African-American, most of the time boys, been sent out of classroom because they have responded a certain way?" And there's so many other white students in the classroom who are doing exactly the same thing, but they are always sent out to the principal office. So in recognizing that you guys are doing a lot of outreach, a lot of education, and you're doing it around in many different places, I have not heard one time you say that you're going into the school system. Because that is the place that discrimination does happen, and not just among adults. This is young people. These are our kids coming in the 21st century, and they are feeling discriminated against. So as you do your work, and as you educate, and as you do your partnership, find a way to partner with the educational system, find a way to educate our young people, because if they knew that they had a right to bring a case against a teacher in the school system, you might have even higher numbers of young people engaged in this process. So I say, take some time to build more partnerships, go within our school system, because they too need to know that they have a right to be supported. Thank you. That's it.
Okay, Representative Gruhagen, a short comment, please. We've got five people on the list.
Okay. Am I on the list for asking a question too?
Down about four people, yeah, if you want to wait till then.
I already wind up at the end of the line. No, anyway. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment, and Representative Moran, we've had several conversations about some of the issues that minorities present, and I find that we find more agreement on a lot of those. But my comment is to be understood, I think, from the standpoint that our founding fathers, being less than perfect, okay, any more than we are, they laid down an ideal in our founding documents that we should all strive towards. Mm-hmm. And what that ideal led to, the idea of a creator giving us an unalienable rights, and as our Minnesota Constitution says, a God that is the author of our civil and religious liberties. That ideal, when taught to our children and ourselves, helps us ascribe to a more perfect union. In other words, our founding fathers laid down a principle that led to giving women the right to vote. that led to eventually freeing the slaves, mm-hmm. that led to a more perfect union. And that's what I think we need to keep in mind, that that ideal has a tremendously positive effect on all of us, regardless of our background or ethnic race, when we teach that concept that, number one, we're created equal, number two, that our civil and religious liberties come from God, which is what our Minnesota Constitution. So that's my only response to your comment. And besides that, the more I get to know you, the better I like you.
Okay, Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just preface my question is with a quick clarification. Representative Gauthier, one of the reasons I made my statement is it's not a political statement. Representative Johnson, Representative Mullery, the Chair, we all sat on this committee last year with Chair Paymar doing an excellent job of requesting information because we have a tough task to do. The one thing I like about this committee in general, it's very bipartisan. What's more important than the public safety? So we have a very difficult decision to make. We need the information. We're asking these groups to come with us with solutions to help us because we're going to have a target to meet in the middle of March. So it's not a political statement. It's simply saying, bring us this information and help us. Help us so that we can make very knowledgeable decisions. My question there to the director is if we ask for a 15% reduction, it appears that roughly 80% of your budget is human resources. So that looks like that would be about a seven FTE cut. What would that do? Where would you be able to find, or could you find efficiencies other than personnel, or what would that do to the department?
Commissioner.
Yes, Representative, Cornish Representative. Our department is primarily, the budget is for staffing, and what I'm going to suggest is, instead of me trying to come up with a 15% where the cuts would happen, to be honest with this committee, our new commissioner will begin work next week, and I'm going to defer to him to be able to analyze where our resources are, what the priorities are, what he wants to, what his vision for the agency is, and let him be able to make that decision.
Mr. Chair. And Director, I appreciate you being here today, and I understand the position you're in, but I guess that's just the message, is that we are asking for help. It's not demands, it's just we would like to be able to work with everyone and get your input. So I appreciate the position you're in and for being here today. Thank you.
And Representative, if I may, I believe that, again, we want to cooperate with the committee and provide you as much information as we possibly can to help you make good decisions. And if that is a specific question that you would like us to respond to, I'm sure that we can provide information on what we would do on specifics like that.
Thank you. Okay, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's actually just to piggyback on Representative Kelly's comment. Commissioner, just a question for you. Do you know if your agency had the opportunity or taken the opportunity just to look through the budget and to find ways that you could streamline and save some money in your agency?
Commissioner.
Yes, Representative and Representative, we've looked at it. It's very difficult, again, because it's staffing. One of the things that we are looking at too is that there will be our workforce in our agency is how I want to say, been with the agency a long time, so there might be some future retirements, there might be some attrition going on in the agency. Then the commissioner can make a decision if those get filled or if he wants to change the resource, move the resources in another area. But I think that with our aging workforce in our department, there might be some opportunities there.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your work over at Human Rights. A question I have, looking at the description of what you folks do, it seems like you provide mediation services, conciliation services. Do you have any idea, any numbers, either specific or approximate, as to how many cases you keep out of our overburdened judiciary and save us from having to deal with those folks through the court system?
Yes, Representative
Commissioner.
Representative Johnson, the department has its own alternative dispute resolution program where we try to get cases to settle before they go into the investigation system. There are approximately 50% of the cases that where charges are filed that do satisfactorily get settled in our mediation program. And this mediation program is, again, staffed by volunteer attorneys. We have approximately 79 attorneys throughout the state of Minnesota that will act as mediators for us in these cases.
Representative Johnson.
And just that point then, and if these cases weren't resolved, would they end up going to the court system? I guess that's what I'm getting at. Are you saving cases from going to our judiciary?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, these cases would end up going into our system for investigation.
And Representative, just a second, a question. I don't think anybody asked a question yet, whether what would you do with a 15, 20, or 25% cut, or did we?
We did the 15%.
15? Okay. All right. Sounds good. All right. I missed that one. I thought we didn't go any higher than 15. Okay. And not that we're going any higher than you. We asked the other agencies that question also. So, okay. Representative Nornes, and then Grunhagen, and then Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess in our discussion, the one thing that I keep thinking about is how perhaps this can be a negative force on some of our employers where they're fearful of things happening. But I guess I had an incident that was told to me about an employer that was interviewing a potential employee. And back where I come from, you're pretty informal. And in the course of the conversation, I think the question was asked, it must be hard to find a job at your age. And it cost the employer, I think, about $2,600. And I'm wondering, was that a complaint that would go to your department? I mean, somewhere he got some legal advice as to how he could get back at the employer for that statement. Is that the kind of thing that you deal with, or... I'm just kind of curious.
Commissioner.
Representative, depending on the circumstances, if the individual was not hired because they believed they were, the employer thought they were too old, they could allege age discrimination. One of the things that we want to do in our agency is protect the employers as well as the employees. There are a lot of individuals that file charges with our department or believe they have discrimination complaints, want to bring their employers into an action where there isn't any. And since we do law enforcement, it's a neutral. We're a neutral agency. So we're not advocating for one side or the other. We just want to make sure that the law is enforced correctly for all. And so there's employers, we do try to protect the employers as well as charging parties or employees for unfair, unwarranted charges of discrimination. And that piggybacks with our education and outreach, where we do explain to businesses and groups all over the state, you know, what are the correct questions you can ask in an employee interview and why you can't ask this and what the ramifications could be. So we do want to provide as much of that education and training to our businesses as we can.
Mr. Chair, I guess just to follow up comment, my concern, again, using that as an example, is that to me taught an individual a way to sort of scam the system. If you got away with it at one employer, you set a trap at your next potential employer, and to me that there's potential for that. And I guess I'm thankful some days that I'm not in business anymore because it is more complicated. and not quite as much fun as it used to be because of it's so restrictive, and you're on the edge, it seems, every day for somebody to come at you. So that's
Representative Grunhagen, and then Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, you've been under the spotlight here today, and I understand that. The and my question, regarding your previous testimony, now I was out of the room for a little bit, so I don't know if this question had been asked or not. But I think, if I remember right, in your previous testimony, the question was stated, do all other states have a similar department? And your response was no, many of them don't. How do those states handle these types of complaints without an agency like yours in place?
Representative Cornish, they would, the individuals would file in district court.
Okay.
So it would kind of rob you to pay Paul. So the district court systems would be full of those cases.
Representative Grunhagen.
And just one follow-up comment on the educational piece, and I know I'm belaboring this point, but you know, I just strongly urge you to teach the concept in your education programs of a creator or God, and that they're the author of our civil liberties. Because when we censor that from our society and from our educational system, especially our children, in my opinion, you are not going to be able to print up enough money to take care of all the problems that come out of a situation where you remove that principle that our civil and religious liberties came from God. Just a suggestion.
Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to pick up on the line of questioning or comments that Representative Gauthier was talking about. He was former mayor of Duluth. And
that was the mayor.
That's news. Councilman. Really? Councilman, excuse me. Yeah. And it spurred a thought. There must, I hadn't thought about this, but in the local governments, there must be the human rights organizations there as well. So my question is, how many, do you work with them, and can you give us a sense of how many of our cities have organizations? Maybe if you could talk in terms of numbers of people, maybe, or something. And then how do you work with them? And it's no secret. I mean, what we're trying to do here is figure out ways that we can make a reduction, but in the amount of money we're going to spend on this, and yet retain certain services. And of course, the thought here is not to push it all down to the local level, but there may be ways that we can work. Can you give us a sense of the local level, what's going on down there?
Certainly. Representative, there are only two cities in the state of Minnesota, Minneapolis and St. Paul, that have enforcement authority with their civil rights ordinances. And
Mr. Hernandez.
Representative, Duluth recently went through a change in their human rights department, so I'm not up to date fully as to how that might have changed.
If they have enforcement authority or not. But the Minneapolis and St. Paul both have civil rights. One has a human rights department, one has a civil rights department. They enforce different jurisdictional areas than the state does, but we do definitely work with them in order to try to streamline processes. For example, for the contractors that do business with the city of Minneapolis and the city of St. Paul, a lot of those are the same businesses that would do business with the state of Minnesota. So we would have a reciprocity on those certificates of compliance. If they've been approved by the city of Minneapolis or the city of St. Paul, then the process for getting approved by the state of Minnesota would be a much more streamlined rubber stamp kind of process, so that it's not so that the businesses don't have to go through the same type of requirements for each local agency. But the directors of those agencies in Minneapolis and St. Paul and the State Human Rights Department have always had a working relationship together.
Representative?
I think I'm finished. I don't know what else to really ask in that line.
Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, just a clarification. I see he's left, but Representative Kelly said I was on here the last term. I wasn't on the fiscal. I was on the policy, so we never talked about dollars. And the second thing is, I hope Representative Leidiger isn't going for more local mandates, because it sure sounds like it, and boy, there'll be a fight there. But I used to do a lot of construction law and was in the construction law section of the Bar Association, among others, and I used to get a lot of complaints from contractors that, and they said that your office only is able to do about 50 or 60 of the 2,000 or roughly 2,000 companies each year, and basically the contractors that were contacting me they believed in the law, and they said a lot of companies are getting by without complying with the law, and they thought it was unfair that those companies were getting by because you weren't able to check into enough of them. Is it correct that you're roughly in the area of 50 to 70 a year out of roughly 2,000 or something on that order?
Yes, Representative Cornish, Representative. We do roughly 100 audits per year of businesses that do business with the state of Minnesota. This is both construction and non-construction.
Right.
Currently, there are three professional staff in our agency that are responsible for the 2,000 state contractors. So we do the best we can. We would prioritize those that would have more opportunity for hiring, those that receive more money from the state of Minnesota. But if I can just make an aside comment on that, too, for about 14 years I worked in the contract compliance program at the Department of Human Rights. And I'll tell you that one of the most rewarding things for me was when we would go to an exit conference with these businesses, whether it was Blue Cross Blue Shield Minnesota or other large businesses that we did a compliance review on, and we would sit down with the CEO of the company and we would say, we talked to 150 of your employees, we went through all of your policies and procedures, we looked at all the ways that you hire and fire and do all your human resources activities, and we found these things that we think you can do better on, and this is how you can do that. And the CEOs, in 100% of the cases, were always saying to us, thank you so much for coming. We've learned so much from you. We had no idea we were doing this wrong. We had no idea we could do this better. We're so glad to hear, you know, what the employers are saying and what you recommend that we do. And I'll tell you, we walked out of there, and that was the best part of working in that contract compliance area, was getting the CEOs to appreciate what we were doing for the businesses, and for free, basically. They were getting consultant services that only because they were doing business with the state of Minnesota that they would get those types of consultant services.
Mr. Chairman, I was just trying to find out if the businesses that were complaining to me were correct, and they are, so they don't have any further questions.
Okay, Representative Muller, Representative Mariani, and then Gauthier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you both for being here today, and thank you for the work that you do, and thank you for sharing that last piece. I note that in our statute we require the department to submit a report annually, I think, to the legislature, and I would hope that those kind of, even if they're anecdotal stories that you just shared, are part of that report. I think that speaks to the common sense approach, I think, that we crafted here many years ago when we created this department. And I was just looking through the language here, where we were pretty clear that, you know, it's our public policy in the state to secure for persons in the state freedom from discrimination. And I have to say that I think everyone, I think everyone here knows that discrimination is a very real characteristic of our society. We're not unique, I suspect, on the planet in that, and we all struggle as good citizens to overcome it. But it nonetheless is a presence in our lives. As a person of color, I can tell you in my own family, countless stories of terrible instances with people in authority, in government, in the private sector, et cetera. And, you know, it's because we're a nation of laws that that we're able to deal with this issue. We're not a theocracy. In fact, I would argue that if we were a theocracy, we would still have slavery in this nation, and we would still have women subordinate to men, because that was the situation in this country 200 years ago. And it was through a system of laws that we were able to move beyond that. And it really sets this nation phenomenally, historically apart from other nations in the history of humankind. I think we've led humanity on that precisely because we rooted our actions in laws. And, you know, members, I know we're all struggling with, you know, how we're going to properly finance government here. It's a fair exploration. It means we're going to have to ask some tough questions about our values and our principles here. But I want to submit to you that if we're going to attempt to deal with financing important functions like the Department of Human Rights, which, after all, is set up to protect the most fundamental reason for our existence as a nation, which is to affirm the individual rights of men and women. If we're going to attempt to continue that work purely by just cutting state government, then I think we need to ask ourselves whether or not we're walking away from our values of protecting that fundamental reason for our existence. And I suspect this conversation is going to get more tougher and hard for all of us in the coming months. I do have a quick question, though. I suspect that your department has not been immune from cuts in recent years. And there is a tipping point, I suspect, for any organization in which the ability for that organization to do its work relative to, you know, to the resources it has at hand really becomes into question. I don't know if you're at that point or not. I look for you to provide us some sense and some guidance in that, but I'm wondering if maybe very quickly, since we're a finance committee, you can tell us what the history has been in terms of state government financing for this department over the last couple of biennium. Has that remained steady? Has it increased? Has it been cut? Have you lost staff as a result of? And what can you say in terms of, what can you share in terms of your ability to respond to the very real needs that human beings in Minnesota have relative to their rights? Do you have long waiting lists? You know, that kind of information.
Yes, Representative, Representative Mariani, I can give you specifics as far as employees go. Actually, when I first started with the agency back in 1985, we had 70 full-time staff people, and that number has consistently been reduced until we're down to now our 39 dedicated employees, full-time equivalents. And and as a follow-up too with what Representative Mullery was suggesting, with the number, for example, for our contract compliance audits, with the 2,000 contractors that we do have, we can only we are definitely probably at or below the tipping point for monitoring the businesses that do business with the state of Minnesota. We simply don't have the resources to do all of the monitoring and auditing for that we do. In addition, in order to we're trying to stay within the state requirement. The Human Rights Act requires that our cases be determined within 365 days. And that is becoming more and more difficult to do as well because the staffing in the investigation area has been decreased every year, period. So different criteria have to come up. We have to do different imaginative things and creative ways of getting the work done within the within a timely period. And so those in particular, I would say that as far as your question about the tipping point, I would say we have already passed the tipping point, and we are, and I think we're doing an excellent job with what we've got, because we've had some
in the last few years, some very good management with the agency, very good professional staff, and we've been able to actually enforce as much as we can on the statute, and we do.
Representative Mariani.
Commissioner, you know, there's an old saying that justice deferred is justice denied. And it's a pretty wise saying. When citizens need to wait for long periods of time to redress some pretty basic issues, like whether or not they should have a job, whether or not they can rent an apartment, you know, their faith in their state government, their faith in our society crumbles. And when that happens, you know, only bad things can happen from that. And I was remotely aware that you had had this, the department has this sort of long, stretched out period of time, and it worries me greatly, because I think in the end, it, you know, if we were to continue with this, obviously right now we're under financial stress as a state, but if we're to continue with that kind of scenario over a long period of time, I think people are just going to stop believing that their government really cares about their human rights, and perhaps even begin to question, you know, the validity of the people's government at all. So I am worried, and I know that your department has taken its wax, budgetary wax, over the last few years, and I don't know where the, you know, how many more wax before you just become dysfunctional. Let me just say, two members, that, you know, I know that there's a creative exploration of ways in which we can perhaps privatize some things, and I, you know, I've kind of, you know, I suppose become more sober over the years about the ability for our state government to do a mixture of private and public deliveries of services. I work for a nonprofit organization, so we're private. But I have to say, in this area, outsourcing the enforcement of our constitutionally guaranteed human rights to a private sector, I hope that that's not the proposals that we're going to be floating out here for the people of Minnesota. This is an appropriate government function, and only a government function, and should be carried out by the government and not left to you know, a profit-making entity somewhere to make sure that the person that denied me, you know, my rental property, based on the fact that I'm a Latino, that I don't want a private company to make that decision for me. So, anyway, thank you for your testimony today.
Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I served 5 years on the Duluth Human Rights Commission and served as its president for 3.5 of those years. And I guess when I entered into that realm, in my head I knew there was discrimination, but I also believed we were in the 21st century and that some things wouldn't be said or done. And boy, did I get a wake-up call, because I heard many people coming to the commission saying, I wasn't even allowed to look at an apartment because they assumed I was black by my voice. I got a letter yesterday from a constituent who had applied for a job, and the employer said, well, are you on medical assistance? And that's illegal to ask. It's illegal to make statements, Representative Nornes, that it's hard to get a job at your age. If somebody said that to me, I'd be filing a complaint. And so it isn't just a good old boy, oh, it didn't mean it, because it does happen. I worked for an employer that would make statements about, well, they're kind of old, and I'd have to correct them and say, you can't do that. You know, you can't be making those assumptions. It's based on performance and the ability to do the job. And I certainly believe that your department is a vital function of state government and one that is totally necessary in this state. And I would like to live to see the day where we didn't need a Department of Human Rights, but I don't think that's going to happen. I am thankful for the help that you gave the city of Duluth personally in creating their commission and their ordinance, and I am thankful for the work that you have done and your whole department has done to protect the rights of Minnesotans. And that's what each and every one of us have sworn to do, and we need to be very careful about our how we do that. And I would certainly hate that your department becomes a political football, because it has in Duluth from time to time become a football. And there is no reason that people who feel discriminated against on a daily basis have to continually rally to preserve a government entity that is supposed to be protecting them. And I would echo Representative Mariani's, this is not something for the public sector to do. This exists because the public sector has demonstrated its inability not to discriminate. And so, once again, I just want to applaud you.
Commissioner, I just wanted to assure you that you won't become a political football, that if we do cut your agency, politics or race or anything won't have anything to do with it. I think that we've got a job to do, and you didn't help us out much by your response. And I think that if you were cut, it would be probably somebody's perception that there are a lot of other agencies doing your same work and other states getting along without it. I don't think that we need to eliminate you, and I'm not even considering that myself personally. I don't know what other committee members are feeling, but there are some questions about the duplicity. And I was wondering when the letter came from Mr. Showalter, was how long have you been on the organization, Department of Human Rights?
How long have I been with the agency? 25 years.
Did you or any of your staff argue about it or express your opinion that you think, well, if the chair sends us a letter and asks for this information, it's going to look like we're snubbing him, but we just tell him to look it up on the internet? Did you make an argument with him that might not be a good idea to come before a finance committee with no response, or did you just accept that letter as an order, Commissioner?
We did, Representative, have a conversation with the governor's office as to how to respond to your request for information. And the response was that they were going to be responding.
And they did.
To the committees.
Okay, thank you for that comment. And Representative Gauthier, in your side of the table there, the question is made about business versus a state agency. I think we have to have state agencies like this, I agree, but the reason is because if business rules were applied, all of our state agencies would be bankrupt and gone a long time ago. No matter how much money we lose, no matter how many FTs jump up and down or inefficiencies, we just keep pumping money into them. That's nothing against the organization. It's just the way, unfortunately, how a state runs. If business rules were applied, I don't know how many of them would exist, but we still have to have them. And I was belonged to one of them for many years, and so and discrimination does exist, and we've got to do something about it. There's no doubt here, any of the committee members, I think. It's just how we approach that subject and how we pay for it is the thing. So, Representative Grunhagen, you had a comment. We got about seven more minutes. We're going to...
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, I just finish a couple minutes early if we could.
Just a point of clarification. I would respectfully disagree with Representative Mariani. I don't believe our founding fathers wanted a theocracy. A theocracy is where a law is passed. We all have to believe the same and belong to the same church. They rejected that idea, but they did want an acknowledgement that our civil and religious liberties flowed from God. So neither I nor our founding fathers would advocate a theocracy. We rejected that a long time ago. But I will acknowledge there were some states initially that had laws that pointed in that direction, but eventually those laws came off the books and the national model was adopted. So just a point of clarification. Thank you.
I think we should probably reserve a few hours to talk about race, religion, and sexual gender and get it all off our chests
just
at the same
few
time.
Just a few hours.
Mr. Chair, I'd appreciate that.
Don't invite groom.
All right. Well, thank you very much. My comments made today about your response are in no way denigrate you or your organization. It's just the frustration that we feel here, because we know we're going to catch all sorts of HELL after our decisions and weeping and gnashing of teeth, so we just like to be fair. So thank you very much, Commissioner and Mr. Hernandez.
Could you indulge me for one moment so I can introduce to you the new commissioner of the Department of Human
Rights?
Yes,
you bet.
Kevin Lindsay was just appointed and will be starting with the department next Wednesday. He will be the permanent commissioner.
So
I just wanted to introduce him to the committee.
Would you want to say a couple words? We still got a few minutes. Mr. Lindsay? Good. Welcome to this thing you're coming into here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not really quite sure exactly what the appropriate protocol is because I'm still working for the Ramsey County Attorney's Office, but I do appreciate all the questions today. I feel very prepared now for the oral argument before I have for the Supreme Court on March 1st, which is my last task for the Ramsey County Attorney's Office. So,
welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming. Yeah. We look forward to seeing you in the future.
And I look forward to working with everyone. So thank you.
All right, members, if there's no other comments, meeting adjourned.